Hey, Print Hustlers, welcome back to another episode of Printavo's Print Hustlers podcast. I'm your host, Bruce from Printavo. We've got our co-host, Stephen Ferry from Canvas Inc., and our very special guest, Sean Kirkpatrick out of Lubbock, Texas. Did I say it right?
Lubbock. Where's that at in Texas, Sean?
Kind of up in the square part. It's West Tech. They call it West Texas, but I'm originally from El Paso, which is the very far tip of Texas. And then the big square panhandle part, we still call that West Texas, but I'm up there in the square.
In the square. Yeah. Where did we meet, Sean? Did we meet at ThreadX?
ThreadX, just this last year, yeah.
Wow.
Arizona.
Like we met each other 2 weeks ago, basically, because that's how long COVID's been going on for.
Yeah, that was a fun event. A lot of those events are fun. For Print Hustlers Conf, our deposit is still at the Ace Hotel in Chicago. So I've just been hoping that they don't go under so we can keep the deposit there. But yeah, it's been tricky for hotels, obviously. Sean runs Integrities. Sean, you've got some awesome stuff just from what I've seen posted on Facebook that you've been sharing. But it's funny because you actually said that you've been running Integrities for a while, but just started getting involved in the community outside of your shop.
Yeah, so I've been in business since 2003, started in a little garage, just kind of like everybody with a four-color press, and then you kind of just move your way up. And, for 16 years, I think I'd gone to maybe SGI in Dallas every other year or something like that, but I wasn't talking to a lot of people. I wasn't meeting people. I was just kind of going around and looking, hey, what's the new emulsion or new white ink that I need to look out? Not really building a community of people in the industry. And then, kind of once I got into the digital squeegee and the hybrid sector and started building the Facebook page and just kind of really getting excited about that, I saw other people getting excited. So I started meeting a lot of people and I've just really, really enjoyed it. But that's only been in the last year and a half of my, print journey. And then in the last year, COVID hit and shut it all down. So I'm ready for it to open back up and me be able to go to ThreadX and conferences and Print Hustlers and all that kind of fun stuff just to see everybody and get out of the shop and learn.
Cool. So Sean, you said the word digital squeegee.
Yeah.
And for those listening that don't know what a digital squeegee is, they're going to quickly Google it. But you are one of the early adopters, I guess, of the M&R digital squeegee. Tell us about that experience. It took you 16 years to get one, and being one of the early users of it. Tell us about that.
Well, I think I saw the first one when they announced it in January 2018, and saw it was big monster machine. It was on that big strike at the conference, and I think I walked by it and said, "Hey, I know that's probably out of my price range. I don't even want to look at it, And I've just really not been a fan of DTG since the beginning. When the DTG came out, I actually flew down to Scott Fresner's in Arizona when he had that first T-Jet or whatever and kind of took the class within the first couple months because I'm a real big tech guy. I love everything, future thinking and stuff. And I looked at it and said, all right, you got to spray a shirt and you got to print it. It takes 10 minutes to print a shirt. And I was like, I can't make money on this. Just get out of here. And I've just had a bad taste in my mouth on that. So, I looked at the digital squeegees. It was just a big DTG machine, you can't do anything with it. So then actually in January of 2019, saw it again in Long Beach and took a little bit longer look at it. Let me look at this. What's going on? It's here now. Everyone's talking about it. And within about 3 months, I was just going crazy because my niche market are women's brands that I print for. And just in the few months between the time I saw the digital squeegee and the time that I ended up purchasing one, for some reason, all of my brands decided they wanted to go from 3 to 4 color spot colored prints to full simulated process. So I went from having real easy setups to learning simulated process and setting up, 8 screens, 9 screens and dealing with all the problem, the color changes and just the headaches of the whole thing simulated process. And that really quickly allowed my brain to say, okay, well, hey, digital squeegee, why don't you talk to me about this? And let me find out the benefits of it. And once somebody can wrap their mind around the concept of hybrid and the benefits over traditional printing, it was just easy. I kind of just, you know, I made that mind click and went for it. And I was actually with M&R, speaking to them now, they were really surprised that I was interested in. When they built the digital squeegee, they thought the only companies were going to be the Fanatics and the Latitudes and the Adidas and all these big companies that were going to be printing mass shirts and high quality stuff with 10, 15, 30 presses in it. And they were like, Integrity, how many presses do you have at the time? And I had one gauntlet free. And I was like, you know, I want to add it. I want to put it in there. And they were like, well, you know, we'll sell it to you and, you know, we'll be your biggest cheerleader. But we just haven't had anybody like you do that yet. And I've just made it work. It's really been a really, really big part of my growth in the last year and a half that I've had it. And
wow.
just amazing
wow.
equipment.
So before that, Sean, you said you had a Gauntlet 3. Mm-hmm. And then were you running a direct to screen as well?
Yeah. Okay. You know, it was crazy. Every year, you know, you got to pay taxes at the end of the year, so you want to spend some money. And I had unknowingly started building my shop a couple of years before, building it for hybrid printing. I updated my screen room with the Unicode and the CTS and everything. And I had even upgraded my dryer to a Sprint 3000, you know, not knowing that I was ever going to be printing water-based ink, but I had a little Raticure, you know, and it was doing fine, but I wanted a bigger dryer. So I, you know, picked up a gas dryer and I was literally in a position where, you know, they say you got to spend, you know, if you didn't have anything in your shop and you wanted to go digital squeegee, you're spending $500,000, you know, to put all of the equipment in that you need to successfully run. But I had so much of that already integrated in my shop and set up and everything. So it was just kind of in my mind, a really good move to get into it when I did.
Wow. So would you say you are the smallest print shop to get a digital squeegee?
At the time I was, because everybody else that had one had, I think they when they added it in, they had three or four presses. And at the time, in fact, I thought I was going to get rid of the gauntlet and be running everything. One press, one digital squeegee, running everything, you know, and luckily I kind of looked at it and said, yeah, maybe, you know, if I grow just the digital squeegee side of my business, then I need another press to run anyways. And so I'm glad that I kept everything. And since then I've added another press just because, my business has grown so much because of that.
Wow. And now are you running the digital squeegee on a Striker or?
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know,
cool.
The first time I saw Striker, and it was at one of the shows, I was just amazed. You know, everybody sees these, you know, carousel presses when you go manuals, when you go, you know, all the automatics that are running. And then I saw this beast of a machine that was just long and mean looking, looked like a transformer and stuff. And the heads were moving up and down. I was like, oh man, this thing's amazing. And I really think the Striker and the oval presses in themselves, I think they just lend a really nice synergy with the hybrid system. A lot of people are putting the digital squeegee on carousel presses easily too. So, I mean, it just worked for it's actually worked for the shape of my shop. You know, if I had had room for an 18 color gauntlet, you know, they probably would have talked me into that, but I had a nice long skinny area for me to not have to move a bunch of stuff. And I said, well, that's perfect. I get my Striker and I can have it everything that I want. And it just worked out.
So there's just so many things going through my mind. Cause I'm always in the same boat as you, Sean. I see that thing. I see what price tag it looks like. And then I kind of walk away and I'm like, okay. And then you hear about another shop getting it, another shop getting it, another shop getting it. And were you, I mean, being an early adopter of such a new technology, right? Like how scared were you going into it? Like how much research did you do? Like, And I only live an hour away from their warehouse, and you know, it's scary and intimidating. Tell us about that experience, like jumping into that, because I think that sounds insane.
At the time when I was looking at getting one, I was like, okay, M&R, you know, they do their sales pitch. Had my rep come out and say, oh yeah, you can put it here, and this is how much it's going to cost. Well, I was like, okay, you know, this is brand new. I mean, it's been out for 2 years, but you don't, nobody knows anybody with one. So, I mean, they're showing it off, but you know, they weren't out there. So I was like, oh, can I get some people, you know, can send some owners that I can talk to? And they're like, yeah, it's a short list and you'll be lucky if they send you an email reply. And I'm going, what the heck? So I actually built the Digital Squeegees Facebook page. and decided, hey, let me kind of build it. Nobody is doing it yet. Nope. There wasn't any community. There wasn't anything like that. So I built a page. I got a couple of the owners on there, got a couple of the geek manufacturers that are building it for the hybrid, got some M&R people on there and GSG and NASDAR and everything, and just started getting a group of people so that they can just kind of synergize it and bring the information together. And then it's really gotten to be something bigger than I ever thought it would be. I mean, people are loving it. Since then, now a bunch of owners are on there, and we post, you know, regularly on, hey, this is what we're printing, this is how we're printing, hey, this ink is great, I found this new technique out. So, you know, going back to you, you know, was I scared to do it? I really think, you know, I tell, because I have calls. M&R likes to use me as their example for small shops that are having the same questions. They're like, oh, I need to talk to somebody. And so they're like, well, here's Sean Kirkpatrick's number. Go ahead and call him. And I like to tell people, if you can make that, it's a click in your mind. If you can make that click in your mind to say, hey, I've got so much simulated process, and they take 8 screens, and I've got to separate the artwork, and I've got to build those screens, and I've got to mix those inks, and I've got to set it up. And then, you know, what I was having a problem was, I was working with all these women's brands, and I'd get the final print on there, and I'm like, oh, it looks great. And I'd send them a picture, and they're like, yeah, that flower needs to be more pink. And I'm like, so, I mean, if it was lucky, I could, you know, take the ink off there, you know, put a different ink on, you know, the red, you know, turn it a little bit pinker and change that. If not, you got to start from scratch again. And so, you know, just in that, and then tear the screens down, clean them all. So, I mean, it was just a big process to do one job of, you know, 200 shirts. With a digital squeegee, 3 screens. And then you send them the print, and they say, oh, that needs to be pink. And you go to Photoshop, and you click, 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 and save and send it over, and it's more pink. So it's a 5-minute color change. And when you get your mind around, yes, the hybrid, you know, it's a piece of machinery that costs a lot. The inks cost a little bit more. So your print has a little bit more price built into it. But the savings on the labor of setup and tear down and supplies is monumental. You know, it starts going from, oh, digital, hybrid, oh, you know, and it starts going like that. And when you make that click and say, man, I want to run a lean shop with a small crew, and I want to be pumping a ton of these really high quality designs out on a regular basis, you know, in my mind, I said, it makes sense. And I pulled the trigger, and it's exactly how I thought it would be. I mean, it's just a whole different way of printing.
Sean, can you talk about price point to get into this?
To get into the digital squeegee, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like there's a press.
You got to have a press, and you know, they say 14 colors the minimum. But I tell everybody, I said, you need to put it on an 18 color, no matter what. You know, if you don't have an 18 color, then wait until you can afford one to put it on there.
And why is that, Sean? Because you talk about 3 screens, and then I've heard this again, 18 color.
So it's 3 screens, but it's water-based. So you've got to have a flash and a cool down after each print. So that's basically on 3 screens, with the top coat being the last. The digital squeegee takes up 3, and it's hybrid. So the power of the hybrid is you can put digital printing on 100% poly, but you have to add a bleed blocker screen, which has to have a flash and a cool down before you put on your next white. You can have glitters, you can have special effects, you can have puff, you can add spot colors. You know, CMYK only can hit, you know, 88% of the color gamut, but that top right corner with those fluorescent colors, the CMYK can't hit. Well, you have NASCAR come in, and they need their yellow and orange, you know, fluorescent yellow and orange lettering on there. Well, you just, you know, separate your art, you throw in 2 screens, and you print those on there. So really, cool. You know, you can print with 14 colors and have all the nice, you know, print, flash, cool. You can have that with 3 screens with a 14 color machine. But I tell everybody, you're going to pigeonhole yourself, because you're going to get this great machine, and you're going to be all excited. And then you're going to have a customer that says, this is great. I heard you can print glitter on this. Can you do that? And you're going to be like, you know, I can't.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Okay. So back to price point.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Price point. Digital squeegees. I mean, I think their MSRP is like $210 for that. And then your press and your dryer and that kind of stuff. And, you know, so it kind of prices itself out of these smaller shops. You have to have a big dryer. I mean, I know a lot of people aren't printing water-based ink, but you have to have, you know, gas dryer. I'm running 16 feet of heat, and I'm probably going to be running, next time I have M&R out, I'm probably going to add another drone to my Sprint 3000 just to get just longer heat so I can run these things a little bit faster. But yeah,
wow.
You know, and then you want to have your screen set up, you know, you want to have Unicode so that every screen is consistently coded. You want to have CTS, you want to have, you know, you're burning down to a science. So yeah, I mean, it's the next level of printing, you know, I mean, you got to have everything running, and that's just in the marriage of traditional screens. And when you're printing all traditionally with just screens, you can have crappy screens with low tension, and you know, you can make it work because then you can adjust the rest of your screens to kind of make up, to cover up. And that when you're working with a hybrid, your screens have that tension, and so it's pressing the ink on the shirt, and if there's a little bit low tension, you can have a little give. But that hybrid, the digital squeegee doesn't care. It's a computer that says, I think it's going to be here. I'm not compensating for any stretch. I'm going to print it completely flat here and there. And you can go in and easily with Photoshop, you can stretch the image, you know, 2 pixels down and make that happen. And it's part of what I like to call cheating. And I really think, I mean, it really is cheating. The digital squeegee makes fixing art a dream come true. I mean, you don't have to pull your hair out like you would with traditional screen printing. If something isn't working on press, you can literally just go to Photoshop, fix anything, and then save it in 5 minutes and be printing rather than
tearing. Gotcha. Sean, when they started installing it, when do you think, you know, you were finally up and running? What was the learning curve like?
So, and I tell everybody, because, you know, it, whenever anybody gets a new piece of equipment, they're just like, I want it. I want to run. I want to get all excited about that. And half the owners already have jobs set up. You know, they haven't even got the machine installed, and they're like, we already got work. We've been selling it because we've been promising our customers. You know, it is a different is set up. You know, they come in, if you don't have anything, they come in first, and it takes 2 weeks. It took a week and a half to get the striker, you know, set up and all that kind of stuff. And then they have the digital guy come in, and he sets up and spends a week with you on setting up the, registering it to your press and teaching you kind of how to work it and everything like that. And then I ran it about 2 weeks, and they tell you, hey, write all your questions down, you know, try and just do your best just running it. And then M&R sent out my rep and the digital squeegee head, and they spent another 3 days with me and really just got everything tweaked out, nailed out stuff. So, I mean, the M&R does a really good job with helping you get into it and get comfortable running it. But you have to understand that it's just a different, you know, it's a different way of printing. You know, you can't use all the old tricks that you're used to with traditional screens. You know, it's a whole different way. It's a whole different way of separating art. Plastisol ink, you can print a red fade with halftones, and you can see, you know, little red dots on a black shirt. With the digital squeegee, with hybrid, those CMYK inks are, I mean, they're just basically colored Kool-Aid. You know, that's what it is. I mean, it's very, it's low pigmented, water or, you know, whatever it is. And if there's not a white dot that you've printed on a black shirt for that ink to sit on top of, you know, it disappears on the black shirt. So, you know, it takes artists, I'm hearing it takes artists a week to a week and a half to just kind of settle in, build their bases. You know, you're going to go through some screens kind of learning the process, but, you know, setting it up and saying, oh, well, you know, that right there, I need to push that base out a little bit more. And then, like I say, with cheating, you know, then you print a little black in the Photoshop, you print in the digital design, you print a little black and it sits on the black shirt, and you can get these really beautiful fades and all this fun stuff, where you normally wouldn't print a black fade on a black shirt because you wouldn't have to. But it allows you to just kind of do some really cool things in some really quick time to just make it look how you want.
Sean, do you send just the high color count jobs onto the digital squeegee now? Or are you like, does it expand what's also possible, or does it lower minimums, or like, how do you determine now which press you're going to throw a job on?
So I typically have enough work on my digital squeegee to be running just the good stuff. You know, I've catered to my girls in their brands and said, hey, when you want your full color, all the blends and all that stuff, let's go and do that on Digital Squeegee. If you want your four color spot color, we're going to send it to the Gauntlet. But DFW Inc. down in Dallas, they've been running theirs maybe 2 months, and he's running everything on there. I mean, it's great. I saw a video that he posted, and Kenneth is just going to town. I really believe that Kenneth is going to be the proof that, you know, you could have one digital squeegee set up in your shop and you can run it. I mean, he's running three colors, you know, three color designs on this thing, and like at 48 job shirt, you know, because it's three screens. So, I mean, really, when you get to the fact that you're like, you get to the point, you price it correctly, and then you get to the point where, hey, this is what we're going to do. I mean, it just becomes just another piece of equipment in your shop. It kind of loses, once you have it in your shop and you run it regularly, it kind of loses the wow factor. I think a lot of people see it and they think digital squeegee and you can only run, you know, beautiful full color art on that, but it's really not. You can, I mean, it hits, I wouldn't say it hits Pantone's 100%. There's some different rips that you can buy, upgrades that you can buy. Luckily, I don't have customers that are really nitpicky about Pantone's. So I haven't had to worry about it. But if you have customers that are really nitpicky, the beauty of it is you print the design, you bring your Pantone over there, you say, oop, this isn't it. Let's up the cyan a little bit. You print another one, you put your color card next to it and say, oh, that's it. And you can have that color and save that as a color profile for Pantone, blah, 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 blah. And then every time it wants to hit that, it just loads that in. So, but yeah, you can print anything on it. And I'm finding more and more shops are, you know, printing 24 shirt orders, you know, three color, four color prints, and they're printing on the digital squeegee, and they're doing it in three screens, so it's starting to make sense.
Sean, let's talk a little bit about like pricing and when it starts to make sense. Talk us about that, because you know, bringing in that much equipment, your just natural overhead was going to go up, right? The cost of keeping that machine there is going to get much more expensive, and ink and maintenance and all that stuff. Are you constantly number crunching, or has it paid itself off already?
So I just paid off the machine after a year and a half. I did a lease with Geneva, and they gave me a 5-year lease on it because it was upwards more of $300,000-$400,000 to put all this equipment in. And I said, oh, you know, it's a bunch. It was, you know, with the taxes or whatever they add in it, it was almost an $8,000 lease a month for that machinery. And I thought, wow. Yeah, I mean, who knows how long it's going to take to do this. And got it in July of 2019, and I had to pay taxes or pay off the machine last year. So I paid off the machine in the middle of COVID.
That's awesome. Congrats, Sean.
Made enough profits to pay that off in a year and a half. So really, I don't know if the digital squeegee made me that money necessarily. I wish I was a number cruncher and could do that. And that's probably one of my on my list of, you know, 1 million things to get done this year. But it definitely helped me gain customers. And I'm traditionally mostly a contract printer, so it gained me customers. And then they would send me regular processing jobs. So it just grew. Having the capability to print hybrid in my shop grew my business. And so, yeah, it's been great.
Wow. Is there someone in your...
You know...
Go ahead, John. Anyway. Go ahead.
And, when pricing came in, you know, I think I was like the 10th or 12th shop in the country, and everybody else was big. So they had their pricing locked down. They had, you know, whatever. And so, you know, I just kind of threw it out there what I thought I wanted to be. I really believe that it's a new technology. The machinery isn't cheap to get into. So I bought the equipment to make money. And so I didn't want to kind of just throw it out there and race to the bottom. And I encourage every owner when I talk to them, I said, hey guys, make sure you're showing the value. Make sure your customers know that it's all printed on the digital squeegee and that this is a higher level of printing and they're getting these great prints and it's water-based and it feels great and it looks great. Make sure you're charging for that so that they know that they can be proud that they have new technology. And I really, you know, I kind of threw my pricing out. I think I'm not the cheapest. I don't think I'm the most expensive. I'm kind of right there in the happy middle. But
gotcha.
I really hope that in the near future, hybrid is kind of something that customers start asking for. You know, digital squeegee, you know.
Wow.
You're going to cut you off.
What, what's something you don't like about it, or something that, like, what's your biggest critique or kind of warning, I guess? Because it is a new technology, and you know, knowing
Sean's, Sean's going to lose his M&R sponsorship.
Yeah. They haven't paid me one thing, so I
how many? Yeah,
this, and I tell them that, you know.
I'm kidding.
No, with the digital squeegee, you know, I have to think. Disadvantages are that gamut. I really wish I could print fluorescence, and I'm sure M&R is working on adding. And it's, I don't know how they're going to do it. They're going to have to really get some engineering, but adding probably a fluorescent yellow and fluorescent green or something, whatever those other hexachrome color, you know, DTG machines are that are adding that fifth and sixth color. That's really what I'd like to see in the next iteration, because when you can't get those color, I have my customers, they're Southwest, and so they love that turquoise color that's in all the Serapi and stuff like that. And I can't hit that bright turquoise that I really want to print. And so, yeah, you're constrained to some colors. Most of my customers, I say, hey, is this good enough? And they look at the rest of it and the fact that they're printing Serape, which I was having to print, you know, simulated process with like three colors to make up 15 or 20 with halftones. And, you know, so they're looking at everything else and they're like, you know, this looks great. I'll take it. So everybody else has been really happy, but me being the perfectionist, I'd love to dial in some colors a little bit more without having to have a spot color.
What about like downtime? Like, has the machine, I mean, you know, things break, things go down, like
zero,
huh?
You know, and I've been lucky. There are some other people that, install, you know, didn't come as quickly or happen as quickly as mine did. You know, my digital tech, he came in, I said, okay, realistically, it's Monday morning. When are we going to be doing our first print on that? And he said, if everything works perfectly by Thursday afternoon, we could probably do some test prints. And I was like, okay. So I was budgeting my time for that.
Wow.
Tuesday afternoon, he's like, we're done. You got anything? Let's bring some screens. And he said, this, you know, they're getting a lot better at getting it set up, getting registered, getting it going. And that was, you know, a year and a half ago. So, but the machines, you know, they're big machines and they're run by computers and there's heads. And during my installation, one of the heads popped. And so we had one overnighted in and they got it fixed. And since then, in a year and a half, I've had absolutely zero problems, no heads, no head problems at all. You know, the machine, it's not like DTGs, you know, the big problem with them is if you're not running them on a consecutive basis, you know, that white ink gets clogged in the heads and then you have a, you know, expensive paperweight. Because there's no white ink in the digital squeegee and the pigments and the inks that they use, they're really, the maintenance on this machine, you wipe down the inside, and that's about it. You make sure that the ink is filled and it will definitely know, let you know if it's not, because it beeps at you forever. But I mean, really, I've spent $0 on maintenance and I probably don't clean it as much as I should. But I mean,
you're going to void your warranty. Watch out. Don't say that on camera.
I mean, it's really a dream machine. It's really kind of just a set it and forget it machine, which, you know, I didn't expect, but after a year and a half, I can honestly tell people, you know, if you have experience in DTG and having problems with that, this isn't the same machine. I mean, M&R has really made this to where it keeps itself. You know, I did a video my first Christmas, and we take the week of Christmas off, and so there was 10 days that we had the machine off, and I said, you know, I was trying in my mind, I'm like, I'm gonna make videos this year, and of course COVID happened and I, you know, didn't have time at all, but it was 10 days and I said, I'm going to make a video of me turning the machine on, of not running it for 10 days, run one nozzle check, you know, doing and seeing how it looked, and it came out perfect. And I was just really amazed. And I was like, well, I mean, I'm going to do one take and it's either going to be good and I'm going to be like, oh, this is an amazing video, or, well, yeah, let's run it a couple more times. I understand it's been 10 days and it was just perfect. And, you know, M&R was like, you know, that was a great video because it just proves, you know, what we try to tell every customer, you know. And of course, you know, a lot of people here, you know, M&R is there to sell machines, you know, so they're going to give you the sales pitch and, you know, and tell you how great this machine is and how it can change your shop and do all that stuff. And a lot of people get that sales pitch and that's what kind of gets the little bug in their ear. And then they want to talk to owners, you know, okay, you know, we heard M&R. Now let's hear from somebody who's been running it for so long and actually run it in production and get an honest opinion. And I try to give that as honestly as possible.
Hey, Sean, you talked about being big in women's apparel and that being your niche. How did that happen?
So about 8 years ago, you know, I'm in my little shop, and I actually had a six-hole sportsman at the time, and I was just a two-person shop. I had me, I was doing all the accounting, everything, and I had a guy that was at the end of the dryer, and then he cleaned screens, and we were just, you know, I was just making a living. And had some girls send me an email, and they were, one of them was graduating college, and she wanted to start a line, and, you know, she couldn't find anybody else in town that was willing to do, you know, 36 shirt orders and stuff. And at the time I was slow, and I said, yeah, let's give it a try. And her business literally grew. We grew together. And now she's doing, she went from, you know, everybody starts a brand with your printed t-shirts, because that's just the easiest to get into. Now she doesn't do printed anymore. She's a full-blown custom apparel business, you know, doing millions of dollars in sales a month. And so I was sad to see the business go, but I was happy, you know, because she allowed me to grow my business to a level that I never thought that I would get to. And so I kind of learned along the, we learned along the way kind of what worked, what didn't. I kind of learned how to work with women in their shops and their, you know, the intricacies of helping women's brands and stuff, and they're picky, and they're, you know, particular, and you just kind of I've learned to be a concierge service to them, and you know, they like to text a lot, and you just give them all the attention that they need, and then you can be really successful with that. So when I saw them starting to tailor more to the custom apparel and not printing, I quickly found another couple brands and, you know, just bugged the crap out of them and said, hey, I want to be your new printer, and this is what I can do, and this is how I can do it, and I can save you money, and I can give you my concierge service. And they reluctantly gave me a couple orders, and then quickly found out, hey, this guy is going to do what he says. And so now I'm printing for about five brands, and consecutively, and that makes up about 80% of my business. And
that's so interesting. Just diving into that, that's crazy.
Really went into the niche. Interesting. And you know what? What's funny is, like, when we joke about, oh, I want to start a clothing brand, customers, right?
Yeah.
We joke about, right? Everyone jokes about that. Like, oh, I want to start a clothing brand. You know, are you also in fulfillment as well? Are you handling, like, the shipping and all that stuff, or are you just printing and giving it to them?
Yeah, I'm printing it and giving it to them. So they aren't even in the town. So I have one that's about 2.5 hours away, and they drive a van to my shop 4 to 5 times a week and pick up a pallet. You know, yesterday, literally, we printed 2 pallets worth of shirts for them yesterday. So they picked up, what's today, Thursday? They picked up Tuesday and Wednesday, and I just, you know, we get it in. We start printing it. We wait for UPS. I'm like, hey, we got this. We go full tag and fold with it also. So, I mean, we just really just, we cater to them, and they've just blown up my business. They also grew last year in COVID because, you know, malls and Target and all that stuff was shut down. So women getting their stimulus checks, they were online stress shopping. And so my online, my women's brands, they blew up. And so then that business came my way, and, you know, we just had a really great year last year.
Do you handle the fulfillment for that too, and storing inventory, or just ship it off to them and they manage it?
Typically it comes in and it's in my shop for 3 days and I ship it out, but I've told them, okay. You know, sometimes when they'll get a good deal on something, or they know something's really going to sell really well, they'll ship in a pallet or two, and they'll say, hey, can you store this for us, and just pick off of it and stuff. And I've got a large enough space now that I can do that. I put it up in a rack, and I have a little spreadsheet that every time we take off, my people, you know, count off and stuff like that. And we make that work. So yeah, the customer before that, I had full fulfillment with them. In fact, they were actually building, they got really big, when Raglan's were big, and the baseball shirts. So 90% of what I printed of them was Raglan's, and it was those American Apparel Raglan's with the fluorescent colors and stuff, that when those were really big. And so we would order 10,000-15,000 Raglan's at a time, and I would store them for my customer at, you know, not really any cost, you know, as part of that concierge service that I give to my customers, that I, you know, I have the space, and I'm going to do that for them. It doesn't take a lot of time or, you know, energy to have it there. And I'd actually rather have control of it versus having it shipped in and having to count it and kind of figure out when it's going to be here and stuff anyway. So it just made sense for me.
That makes sense. Wow. So you must have grew then in 2020, or what did that look like for you guys?
Yeah.
Since it was so heavy online brands.
Yeah, 2020, you know, I feel bad because there's so many shops in the industry that, you know, their sales were completely down because they did live events and schools and all this kind of stuff. But that wasn't my, niche. So my niche actually grew during COVID, and it was the best year that I've had in 18 years. And I really believe that this year is going to be better than that. And then I think that when the dust kind of settles on all of this stuff and the industry that's needing t-shirt every, you know, there hasn't probably been a concert t-shirt printed in the last 6 months, or if there hasn't been one of these days, you know, the clouds are going to clear and the sun's going to come out and everybody and their mother is going to need printed apparel for their events and stuff. And there's going to be more business than any of us can even fathom. And so the shops that are holding tight and they're making things work and everything, I think there's going to be, or at least I hope there's going to be kind of a reset in the industry. I think over the past, you know, decade, it's been kind of a race to the bottom. You know, everybody, there's such a saturated industry because, you know, companies have made it very affordable to get into even low level automatics. You can get into, you know, printing software and separation software and ink mixing. It's just become so much easier than when the masters had it in the 80s when they had to do everything, you know, by hand, and, you know, they didn't have all these computers to work with. So there's a lot of shops that, you know, for 10 grand, you could be running a really successful shop and reprinting and stuff. And some of those shops that may not really need to be in business because they were just kind of doing it by the, you know, seat of their pants and stuff, they've probably not been able to weather the storm. And some of the other shops that have made it, I'm hoping that we can get back to pricing to where we actually provide a really valued service and people don't mind spending a little bit more money. And especially with it, you know, if there's so much business you know, it's kind of a supply and demand. Hopefully the print industry can take it and say, hey, you know, if you need this stuff, you know, my price went up a little bit because you need it and I'm signed with work. So you're either going to pay it or you're not going to get some shirt.
Right. Yeah. That's the, we chat about that a lot, especially at the pricing side of how online stores and running stores have allowed you to charge more, and handling fulfillment have allowed you to charge more, and finishing to charge more, and just be able to differentiate. I'm curious, with all of your growth in 2020, with being able to offer hybrid now, what do you feel like is your biggest challenge coming up this year now? And how do you plan on actually executing on it? Because we've also been talking that too, of creating our annual plan, but how do we make sure we actually do it?
So my goals for this year are picking up more hybrid customers. But before I do that, my goal is to have my shop running without me. I've been such a big part of everything, and I like to have my thumb on every part of the process. And I see that if I want to grow and want to get out there and be able to talk, I can talk to hybrid printing and show it off better than any salesperson probably. So rather than get a salesperson, I'm trying to get my shop to where it runs itself. You know, the art comes in and I have a person doing that, building invoices, and then my shop, they're making sure that everything looks good and high quality and counting and all that stuff gets done. So once that happens, which I'm hoping by probably the second quarter, that I can get out there and really start hitting the digital market, because I found a lot of contract work. You know, people don't necessarily have the space, the funds to get hybrid into their shop. And so I believe it's going to be a very, very big year for my contract hybrid. And I just, you know, really it is, you gotta let people know that you have it. You know, if they don't know you have it, they can't send you work. So,
but how do you plan on trying to do that? Cause I think a lot of us absolutely, you know, want to not be there, but we always seem to get sucked back into
Bruce, the day-to-day operations. Sean's going to read Traction with you and finish the book this year. That's your 2021 goal.
Is that our Printavo book club?
That's your Printavo book club, but Bruce reads it over the course of 3 years.
The audiobook is so boring, but the physical one takes so long. You're like, I feel like I read a chapter, I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, we're gonna go in, we're gonna do this, and then I don't get back to the next one. I'm on the last two chapters.
Yeah, I mean, it's little things. It's little things like me taking off an afternoon and just forcing myself to just get out of the shop. Because if I get out of the shop, then I can't be there to answer questions, to go over and nitpick something, to do everything. And so I'm coming in late. I'm leaving a little bit early. I'm giving everybody the responsibility and telling them, hey, you're in charge of this now. And you know, if it's messed up, it's going to come down on you. It's not me going to be there anymore and looking over your shoulder. So I want everyone to have pride in their work, and I want everyone to kind of step it up. I've implemented quarterly bonuses this year. So everybody knows there's a certain amount of bonus that they're going to get every quarter. And last year I did that for the last two quarters, and they just got the bonus, and we had a lot of mistakes. And I told them this year, I said, yeah, you like those bonuses. But now we're going to go in and say, hey, if we have a shirt and it costs me $400 because we messed up these shirts, I got to order in. I'm going to see who had a part in what that mistake was. And that's coming out of those bonuses. And so that's going to, keep everybody kind of on their toes. You know, it's extra money in the pocket if everyone does their job correctly. And so I got them to kind of have a taste of what it was, because I think it added close to like $6,000 to everybody last year, just kind of, hey, money at the end of the year that, you know, or every quarter that they were able to have in their pocket. And you know, it was a really good Christmas. I gave them the quarterly bonus before the Christmas so that they could go spend it on presents and stuff. But you know, they like it now, and they're like, hey, we're looking forward to our quarterly bonus. And I said, okay, now mistakes and costs are going to be coming out of those, and we'll be having conversations on that, because you know, everybody makes mistakes, and you know, normally the business pays for it, but now since that's money that I'm just kind of popping into you guys' pockets, let's start being responsible for those mistakes. And I think it's only going to take a couple times when I have this conversation, said, hey, this was a $400 mistake, and the three of you guys, you know, didn't catch it, and here you go. I'm going to have to divide it, and it's coming out. And I think it's only going to take one quarter for them to see that makes a difference, and then I expect things to kind of get dialed in real well.
Yeah. Steve, don't you do the mistake jar? Or do you still do that?
We have a couple different versions we've been going through. It's iterating. It changes, whether it's incentive for good work or kind of keeping track of spoilage and stuff. I've found that it's better to give incentive for good work than to take money out. So like every positive job is something. But it definitely, it's tough. It's like a marble in the jar kind of concept for sure. Everyone's a little different in the way they do it. And everyone's motivated a little differently too. Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm a big fan of Gary Vee, and he talks about, you know, going to every you know, having a conversation with every crew member, you know, on a monthly basis. And I wish I had the time for that. But he was talking about motivation. Some people want that word at the end of the day, said, man, you did a great job. I really appreciate you. Some people want more responsibility, and that's what they see as, you know, they're doing their job good because I've given them more responsibility. And some people just want the money, you know, and hey, that raise, you know, or that, you know, oftentimes, you know, we'll be slamming and, you know, we'll have a great week. And at the end of Friday, I'll go and grab Sonic drinks, and I'll go to Target and buy everybody a $50 Visa gift card. And I'll say, hey, I call it the badass bonus. And I said, you guys have kicked ass this week. Here you go. Here's $50 and here's Sonic, and let's finish out the next 2 hours of Friday and have a great weekend. And you know, it's just little things like that that they appreciate. And I think they expect it, and it's good because I know that they know that if they do a good job, there's going to be some perks coming their way. You know, I'm a really big person in the business of, I see a lot of owners and they've got boats and nice cars and all that kind of stuff like that. And I live a real modest life in Lubbock, and it isn't expensive to live. And I tell my crew all the time that, hey, if the business is making money, like, I want to give it to you. I want to make it so that you guys have a really livable wage, and that you guys can prosper and grow, and we can all be making money. So it's, you know, and that's easy for me to do when I have 10 to 12, you know, crew members. When you start, you know, having 40 or 50, it's hard to just start shoveling out tons of money like that. But you know, I've developed my business, and I run real lean, and we're like a family, and you know, it's just been working so far. Until it doesn't work, you know, I'm gonna keep going. But you know, I'm at a point right now where I have three presses, and we're running the third press about half the time, and the Gauntlet and the Strike are running full time. So I really don't think that I want to get any bigger. I've kind of found a nice sweet spot where I can make money, I can pay everybody, and they're happy, and we can work, and there aren't as many headaches as, you know, if I grew to another level and put in another press or two and, you know, had all those extra headaches and stuff and jobs and customers and everything to take care of. You know, you get to a certain point where one press more, you got to hire five more people just because the sheer number of, you know, overhead and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm kind of in a nice spot, and, you know, if I can make it work and run by itself without me there, and I'd be happy.
Yeah, that's cool. Awesome. Sean, cool. I really appreciate the time. This has been incredible to, I think, just to share the journey of your squeegee, your just the hybrid journey, and also how you've grown last year and what you're looking forward to next year. Thanks so much for being able to join us. Guys, you can be able to tune in. You can also reach out to Sean. He's you're pretty present on the Facebook groups. Thanks for joining us, guys. We'll see you guys on the next episode of Printavo Print Hustlers Podcast. Check it out.